Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We're your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. Today we'll be recapping and discussing episode 5 of the Percy Jackson Disney Plus show.
This one was fun because we watched it live with you all. And so, like, getting to watch it and see people, a few people in the Discord were watching it at the same time, and people on Twitter. It's been fun to see, like, the live reactions. And also, this is, like, I feel like this is going to be, like, my raw, immediate reactions because I watched it probably 2 hours ago, three yeah. hours ago. Whew.
It's always fun with these because I had going on, but I was also trying to make dinner because it's, you know, dinner time over here when it comes out. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so I'm like peeking over from my kitchen because I have a little like window looking into my living room, and I'm mm-hmm. like cutting everything whilst watching it. But I'm like, I have to pay extra close attention to this because I essentially have to do a book report later.
Yeah.
So I can't miss any sentences.
Yeah.
Also because it's good and it's Percy Jackson. Well, I want to absorb every detail. But also because I have a book report and I want to be able to, I feel like the fact that I looked away while I was eating pizza and missed Grover's legs the first episode. So I was trying to be a little bit more present this time.
Yeah. It really highlights, you know, having to do a book report. It highlights for me how much I don't pay attention when I watch things. I'm like, I can't, I'm not going to look at my phone. There's some shows I lap up every second of it, and I've been doing that with this, but makes me realize, like, sometimes I watch things and forget everything I watched, so I wrote my notes right afterwards.
And it was funny because Erin and I were on the document at the same time, so she saw me struggling to type, figure out how to type Labyrinth, and it was giving me flashbacks to both Trials of Apollo and the Battle of the Labyrinth.
Battle of the Labyrinth was, like, such a struggle typing that word. If they make it to the fourth season of this show, we'll have to deal with it again.
I know. Just to remind me that I don't know how to spell it. By that time, you know, it's going to be, what, 6 years down the line? We'll
Don't even.
Predict. AI is going to write it while I'm thinking it.
Yeah. We actually won't. It'll be AI versions of us doing this podcast. Yes. Yeah, they'll have our consciousness uploaded. Yeah, and but be smarter, probably. Yeah. But look a little bit weird, you know?
Yeah, something will be off.
Something's a little off in their face.
Their laugh doesn't quite reach their eyes, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so this is episode 5. We're over halfway done with the show, which is really weird. I feel like this, it's been a blur, all of these episodes coming out. And I also found that this aligns with basically just chapter 15 of The Lightning Thief mm-hmm. with the tail end of 14 and the very beginning of 16, which again was like our episode 6, which I think the last episode of the show was chapter 14 mostly. And so we're kind of within the same episode outline of ours.
That's what I was really confused about when I was looking back through our notes. I was like, okay, so we must be on episode this by now. And I'm like, oh, honestly, everything that happens only happens in one chapter. Like meeting Aries, going to this water park, coming back.
No wonder we did like only 3 chapters an episode for our first season of this podcast, because so much happens in each chapter that they can turn into an entire TV episode.
Yeah, like a 30-something minute episode.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, also, before we get into it, I wanted to mention that so many of you sent like such nice messages or comments or some audio messages for our podcast birthday last week, which is, I was like, I don't know how to respond to it, though. They're like, happy birthday to your podcast. I'm like, thank you. but it's not my birthday. Tears
streaming down my face. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Such nice audio messages. We're probably going to do some kind of wrap-up episode after we finish discussing the TV episodes. And we can include all the audio messages in there. So just encouraging you all, if you have any thoughts on the show that you want to share, then maybe you could get on the podcast. You're welcome to send us those through audio messages as well.
All right. I'm going to just quickly read our episode summary, and then we're going to talk about first impressions, and then we'll dive into it. So this is from Disney Plus itself. The quest deepens as Percy, Annabeth, and Grover are tasked with a favor from a fearsome opponent. Mm-hmm. I love how these summaries have gotten shorter as the series has progressed. I think they're trying to not reveal as much. Where in the beginning, they're trying to get anyone who might be scrolling through the show interested and hooked into what might be happening. Mm-hmm. The first three episodes, like, were those really long run-on sentences. This is just a single sentence, and like, they can't give it away that it's Aries. They can't give away what's going on, so it becomes less and less descriptive.
Yeah. We're going to have like a three word sentence by the end. Percy is betrayed.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, the series ends.
The series ends.
All right, Erin, what did you think? First impression.
I enjoyed it. I was definitely on my toes because there were some changes that I wasn't expecting. I think I was like with the Medusa episode, I was expecting them to do that differently, partly from some of the press conference stuff we've gotten to go to where they talked about some of the intention behind Medusa. And also, I just figured it would be updated. And there were changes in this one or new scenes added that I just like really did not see coming. And some of them I was like, I'm trying to figure out the reasoning behind that, what they're trying to set up for later, if it's expanding on things. And I'm still not sure. I'm still processing it. But I had a fun time.
I had a fun time too, and I'm going to say a first impression Manasa thing, which usually comes back to bite me. I did not love the changes that they made. Mm-hmm. I think throughout the series, I've been very happy with the changes. I felt like they were updated and they brought a different, it made it a different story, but not so much that it took away character development. This felt like they were doing something that they had done in the previous episode, again, where Percy sacrifices himself. We see how much Annabeth cares for him, how their friendship has grown and become stronger. And instead of like showing us Percy being insolent again or Annabeth being more of a three-dimensional character, we just get this heroic scene again, which wasn't my favorite. I think it was a little, maybe it'll make sense as we go forward, but there's so much hype around this episode and their interaction and being in the tunnel of love and how it's like a really fundamental moment for Percibeth. And it kind of fell flat. I didn't feel like it established anything in that like whole tunnel of love scene specifically. Yeah. Leading up to it, I really felt really excited. There was some really good banter and really good just like build up. And then it kind of fell flat for me. That's like first impression. Maybe after I've digested it, I'll think differently after 1,000 TikToks and reels have been pushed my way.
Right.
Change my mind. But
yeah, I think I'm still digesting it, which is the problem with recording right after we watch them. I'm like, I don't have thoughts yet. I've already like been on Twitter and I've seen some people's commentary that has changed my, because I had an initial reaction of being like, why are they doing it like this? Not sure if I liked it. And I've seen some people talking about things that I think has swayed me to be more in favor of it. But I want to see how it plays out for the rest of the episodes. Like some of the things it feels like they set up. It's interesting. But I agree where I was like, I'm not sure why this one's in here. I'm not sure what this is about. But I do, the Percibeth lover inside of me, I mean, I will give anything to see any little scrap of Percibeth on screen. So I'm happy with that, at least.
Very true. And both of the kids did such a phenomenal job with their micro expressions and their chemistry with each other. And I loved that. Yeah. No critiques there. Just the writing of the scene, the changes that were made. I'm very curious on like why, like I don't see the motivation behind it.
Same. Yeah, and I think that's important because I know people on the internet are evil and have given these literal children so much crap and casting. And I think the children are the best part of the show. I think the casting's fantastic. I think any criticism we have is more about like the translation from book to show or the the writing, the pacing, etc. So, which is very valid. I think it's good to have critiques of things you love, and it doesn't mean you hate it. And it's also good to not critique everything, you know, nuance. We're going back to that, actually. We're bringing that back.
I mean, we brought nuance in because of the original PJO series. Yeah. So I think it makes sense that we bring it back.
Yeah, we actually invented it ourselves. Yes. Yeah, nobody else had thought of it. Yeah, no one else had ever thought of that concept before. So you're all welcome.
All right, so we start in St. Louis. The arch is on fire. I had this moment where I was like, I can't believe St. Louis let them light the arch on fire for this TV show. I was like, I'm so stupid sometimes.
Can you imagine?
Brain is off. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's for TV. We have to burn down the Empire State Building. Like, just sorry. Yeah. It's for Percy Jackson.
It's, we gotta. You can't say no. It's Percy Jackson.
So obviously we, because of the previous episode, know Percy has jumped into the water, has been saved by his father. The water came and grabbed him. But Annabeth and Grover are not that confident. They're just kind of in the wreckage. There's a bunch of cops. And that's when we see Annabeth see the Fates for the first time. And I thought this was an interesting difference because Percy sees them in the beginning of the book cutting the thread, and Grover also sees them watching Percy. In this one, Grover never sees them. Annabeth sees them. Clox knows who exactly they are, and she gets really anxious about it because she knows what it means to see them cut the thread.
Yeah. This was one of the changes that I was like, I'm not sure if I like that Annabeth sees it instead of Percy, but I think I want to know where they're going with this. I think this is going to come back. Maybe they are kind of looking more into the relationship between Annabeth and Luke, because we know from the books, which I guess spoiler for anyone who's listening to this and didn't read the books. This is, we are having spoilers from the books, but we know from the books that cutting the line, I almost called it a line, the yarn, the line of string represents Luke's fate. And so it is interesting that Annabeth sees that because she has more of a tie to Luke, but in the books, it was always like made to, the reader and Percy always assumed it was Percy's fate that was being cut. And it makes, so, I don't know.
It makes sense that Percy would see it because he's the one who gives the knife to Luke. He's the one who essentially ends Luke's life. So I'm wondering if they're planning on changing that, which would be a big bummer. Like Annabeth gives him the knife instead.
Doesn't Annabeth give him the dagger?
No, or Percy dagger. Does. It's her dagger, but it's Annabeth's her dagger. The one who tells Luke, like, you can do it. Like, you are the only one. Like, calls him out from the darkness of Crook. Mm. And
Crook.
Maybe that's why Annabeth sees the Fates, because it's her decision, her calling out to him that essentially ends his life.
Yeah. I don't know. But that was one of the changes that I was immediately like, huh, I'm not sure. I don't know why they changed that. I don't have a problem with it, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we cut to Annabeth. So while Annabeth is watching the Fates, Grover is noticing that the cops are kind of clocking them and have recognized them probably from the Amtrak, and they need to run. Grover is not very confident that Percy is alive, but Annabeth is. And she's like, he's alive. I know it. Which I love that you said that you remembered that it's something she says about Luke.
Yeah, because that really bothers Percy in The Titan's Curse. Because remember, Percy's like, the whole time when Annabeth's gone, he's like, I know she's alive. I just know it. Like, I can feel it. And then when they're reunited, she's like, and Luke, like, whatever, falls off that cliff or mountain or whatever happened to Crook. And she's like, no, he's alive. I can feel it. And Percy's like, excuse me? Like, I thought that was just a us thing.
Yeah.
You feel that about Luke? And so that was an interesting, I felt like that was definitely placed on purpose for the book fans.
Well, Annabeth goes to search for Percy, finds Percy, which is a difference that I didn't clock, but I've noticed multiple times here, is that Percy now gets wet from being in water.
Mike pointed that out. He was like, he's wet now. And I was like, you're right. He never got wet before.
I think that would, it would just like be too many levels, and yeah, they needed to show like when he's pulling Anna, like later when he pulls Annabeth out, both of them being kind of wet and breathless is like very important to mm-hmm. just show and make the readers understand the gravity of the situation. So I'm sure it was more because they can't really tell. They have to show. Yeah. So
plus, it's not the worst thing. That would make sense on screen anyway. Yeah, yeah, that's one that I'm just like, oh, well.
Nah. It'll look a lot faker. Like, it'll make it too unbelievable to see. So Percy pops out of the water. He's much more optimistic. He tells them his dad told them to go to Santa Monica. He's a daddy's boy now. His dad's number one fan. Mm. And he realizes that they can't, the cops are onto them. So they have to walk to LA.
I love that they're just like, I guess we'll just walk on this highway. We can't take public transportation. We are going on foot all the way to LA. They're clearly kids who have not left New York. No. We don't understand how far LA is.
Also, the just like my mind would be like, this is a show that takes place in 2023, 2024. So why wouldn't they just try to find like a Lime bike and see how far they can get? Steal a bicycle, something. They just like decide to go on foot is just so cartoonish of them.
It's so 12-year-old logic, being like, there's nothing we can do. Guess we are walking. I love that. So then we have a shot of them just like walking down the highway by themselves. And I did, I thought it was interesting that Percy is talking about, he's like, I feel different. I'm way more optimistic now. My dad is real. He helped me. Maybe he's on my side for this. Which, thinking about it, it's really, it's kind of heartbreaking because this is, Percy's never had a dad. And the second his dad, granted his dad is a god, but the second his dad shows any attention for Percy, Percy's suddenly like, I have a father. I'm loved. I'm cared for. I'm being taken care of, because he's so starved for that kind of attention, which is really sad.
He's walking and talking about it right next to Annabeth, who is still paying for. She loved her mother the most. She was her mother's biggest defender from the beginning of this show. And her mom has completely decided to turn her face, like her head away from Annabeth because of something Percy did. And so it's extra hurtful that Percy, who's talked shit the entire time about Poseidon, is getting the affection that Annabeth wants. And so she's kind of sullen and sad. But then we find out that's because she saw the fates, and she tells Percy and Grover about it as they hear the motorcycle approaching, and they decide to hide.
How when Annabeth is kind of down and Percy is like, is it because we hugged? Was that weird? She's just like, why is that what you're fixated on?
It's really funny because Annabeth isn't, in the book she's a little bit more awkward around like Percy and thinking that it might be a date. In this one, she's like so, like, she's very stoic, so you don't see that much, whereas Percy is the one who's like, what if they think we're dating? Oh my god.
It's like, that would be awkward, right? And she's just like, I wasn't thinking about it, but yeah, you made it weird.
The scene where they're crouched and there's just their faces when Ares pulls up and it's just like, hey, like, you kids need a ride. It's like half like stranger danger and like trying to be away from this strange man on a motorcycle. And it's just like so cute. You can just see their little faces and they keep coming up and down.
They're so cute. I was also obsessed with Ares's like very long trench coat and the way it like fell over the motorcycle bike. I was like, he looks so cool.
He looks very cool.
He's very much how I imagined him from the books, that like the type of guy.
I always imagined him more with like a shaved head, like more like almost punk rocker type. This was still like that vibe, but it gave a little bit of the flair of like dad going through a midlife crisis
too, yeah,
you know.
He had a little bit of himbo energy too, I think we'll talk about late in a few scenes, but I enjoyed that.
So basically Ares reveals himself to be Ares, asks them to come and meet him at the diner. Instead of in the books, if you remember, Ares is already at the diner when they show up. And makes them kind of have a conversation with them. In this one, he's a lot more approachable. He's scary, but he's not, he's kind of gives like the dad who isn't really in someone's life, but like is still kind of someone like you would talk about and be like, my dad's so cool. He has a motorcycle kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that just made me, because I was thinking of the dad. He's Clarice's dad. I am really excited to see him and Clarice interact down the, I think in the second, that'll be in the second book.
Yeah.
If we get some backstory on everything that happened with her and Aries, and I think that'll be super, super cool to see.
Let's get that
green light, Disney.
I know. I'm so interested to see how they're going to approach a lot of things because of this casting decision for season mm-hmm. for season two. Like Confederate soldiers, is that going to be a thing?
I think they're going to cut that. I think based on some of the changes they've already made to update, I'm like, that's an obvious one. Like, just, you know, make it some other soldier.
Yeah, there's plenty of like different soldiers. They can even mm-hmm. be Union soldiers. Like, I guess it's supposed to be losing, but like could be French soldiers. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Could just be like British. Unnamed soldiers. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Make it
true.
The British, actually. Yeah.
So this is where we get to see Gabe finally talking shit about Percy.
I'm so glad they included that.
Me too. Because otherwise he seems just kind of annoying, but not like the total slime ball. This kind of cements him in like, is not a cool person and just like a bad father figure fully for Percy. So Aries shows Percy, like, Gabe is talking shit. He implies that Percy has hurt his mother, which is really a really low blow. It mm-hmm. also shows Gabe does not care about Sally and the missing. Like, the fact that Percy and Sally are missing, it's more about vengeance and wanting his car back and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah, he's, like, tearing up about the car in the clip, which is hilarious. And I also thought it was funny that Aries, like when they walk up to him, he's on his phone and he's like, I'm starting wars on Twitter. That is, yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing he would be doing in 2024.
Yeah. I loved the way that, I don't know if you've seen Good Omens, but the way that Aries talks about war between Poseidon and Zeus is very similar to how they approach war in that series as well, where they're like, these celestial beings know war is inevitable. And they're like, oh, might as well have it happen. Like, because we need to prove a point. We need to, I've been wronged in some way without any regard to the fact that there's going to be so much collateral damage. Because it doesn't affect them because they're celestial beings. And so Aries is like, Zeus knows that there's going to be war. He's prepared for it. He knows it's inevitable. So you know what? This doesn't really matter about who stole a lightning bolt. It's going to happen. But he's going to help them get to LA if they go get his shield that he left in the amusement park.
Yeah. He's very much clearly not telling them everything because like, why would he randomly offer to help them? It's very much like how it was set up in the book where he's like, you just need to do me this favor. And they're like, well, I guess we don't really have another option. So sure.
The thing that they didn't keep in the book is that Grover has to stay for collateral, whereas he is with them at the water park and is like outside trying to help out.
He was flying around in his shoes because I remember they got stuck in the Tunnel of Love ride together and Grover's like being his own collateral damage and like flying around with his shoes.
Which I thought was almost a good change because in the previous couple of episodes, Grover has already done that. He's already like Medusa, he flew away immediately and was no help. So they're like, we can't keep having this character just be useless. Yeah. So,
which is what Rick did in the books.
He did.
No wonder we made so much fun of Grover in our early episodes, like with peace and love, but all he did was like fly away or play the pan flute in the background.
Or get injured and cry for Percy.
Or get injured, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we end up having Percy and Annabeth go into Waterland. I loved Waterland.
I thought they
did a great job.
It was exactly how I imagined it, except I did realize, though, that it looked like that in my head, but also in another part of my head. I contain multitudes. I realized it was also in my head, like the spooky land from Scooby-Doo, the movie. The live action one.
Imagine
that, but shut down. Which I feel like it's still kind of on track. I thought they did a great job. I do kind of miss the Waterland merch, how they all were wearing the merch in the book and had bags and shirts and they stocked up on supplies there.
Yeah.
And I was like, Someone should make Waterland merch. Maybe we should do that.
I've seen it. There's a couple of TikToks of like, oh, I make like Percy Jackson merch and it's pretty good. I think things are going to come out that are really cool in the next couple of months. And I'm super excited. All these like very talented creators are going to come out with incredible merch.
I love an obscure niche reference to something that you can wear and no one really knows what it is unless you know. And someone like is like, oh, Waterland, that's Percy Jackson. Everyone else would just be like, guess that's some theme park.
Yeah. And it's fun because it's instead of wearing the bright orange shirts, like you get to wear something a little bit more toned down.
Yeah. Something a little less recognizable.
One thing that I had me kicking my feet and giggling was Percy mentions that the entrance while they're entering Waterland is this like it's very horror movie-esque. It's like a great area for a horror movie. And Annabeth, who we know is just like this child who stares at the sun all day, like doesn't do it. Like she's not in society. She really does not. She's like, oh, I've never seen a movie before.
I was like, oh my God, that's so sad.
And Percy is shocked because we all are shocked because that's so sad.
Yeah. It just Especially, what is Chiron doing as the camp director? Does he not have movie nights? Apparently not. Annabeth just doesn't go to them, which I'd also believe. She's I need to go read and train.
Yeah, like she's just such a serious child. She's like, I need to be trained. I need to be prepared for any possibility. And now, you know, is feeling unprepared actually in the world. Anyway, the thing that got me really, Percy was like, oh, well, you know, if we survive this, we're going to have to change that and like take you to a movie. And I was like, oh my goodness, the Riz. But it just reminded me in the Battle of the Labyrinth, how Sally's teasing Percy because he has a planned hangout with Annabeth after his orientation where his school blows up to go see a movie with Annabeth, and Sally's like, it sounds like a date to me. And I thought that was a cute little, I don't know if it's on purpose and pretend it is, cute little like setup for that, like they finally go or have plans to go see a movie, or they, since this moment, Percy makes it a mission to see movies with Annabeth.
Oh, maybe they do that regularly. That's so cute. And I think they're doing, both the actors are doing such a good job of really portraying. I feel like maybe I'm projecting, but I feel like I can see the awkwardness of like the beginning stages of a crush in both of them. Like the glances they give together, the way Leah as Annabeth looks so like touched when Percy says that, but also kind of confused and weirded out by it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're doing such a great job of being awkward little kiddos.
This is so cute.
I love that.
So they go inside, and this is just kind of a, I think the reason they put this in here, why as they enter the park, is to let us, the new viewers know that Hephaestus built this amusement park.
Yes.
And Annabeth figures that out by noticing celestial bronze and noticing that like it's a little weird that there's almost like a weapon inside the entrance of the water park. And it's because I keep saying water park. I think it's just an amusement park called Waterland.
Called Waterland.
Yeah. I don't think there's, I think the only water ride is the Tunnel of Love.
Probably.
I thought that was interesting because we need a lot of explanation, obviously. Percy just kind of like is given it by Ares pretty early on that he has, like he was there with his girlfriend and like it got uncomfortable. And then Percy's like, oh my God, scandalized that.
Yeah.
Which happens here too. It's not as in depth as it is in the book of Percy being like the sanctity of marriage, but it's like
Book Percy was suddenly like, I am very monogamous, Anna. Just letting you know. Just throwing that out there. I would never do that.
I thought this was interesting. You mentioned it in the Discord, and I didn't see it in the beginning, but when you said it, back in the diner, Grover is talking to Ares and trying to get Ares to reveal who took the lightning bolt. You think that it makes it seem like Grover is suspicious. And I've seen people thinking Grover is going to betray. Percy.
Yeah. And it's not just me, because my sister also texted me and was like, Grover is just being sus on Maine with Aries. And I was like, okay, it's not just me reading that. They're making, I think, like, if I wasn't a book reader, I might suspect Grover. Mm-hmm. Or they're maybe trying to make you suspect Grover. But it's almost, they're making him almost too obvious a target now as, like, Percy's closest friend. If someone who's a friend betrays Percy, the one that would hurt the most would be Grover. But I thought it was different how they have Grover just like actively buttering up Ares and trying to get information out of him about the lightning bolt.
Now, we know from being readers and spoilers is that Ares is under the influence of Kronos specifically, not Krug, but Kronos specifically. Not Krug yet. So it's interesting to see Ares having this really normal conversation with Grover, remembering things, having memories, as if he's not under a spell. So I was like very curious on what direction they're going to go. Are they going to go with the fact that he's been possessed? Or are they going to make Ares kind of a villain, just like ready for war? But they do introduce Kronos and tell the story of Kronos. In the beginning, Ares brings it up to demonstrate how like messed up the Olympians are.
Which reminds me of in the last episode that quote from Echidna of like, it's always been a family story. They're definitely narrowing in or zeroing in on that theme of like, what is family? Is family the thing you're born to? Does that mean you have to love it just because they're your parent or your relative, even if they're abusive and terrible? Because we know from these, like the overarching, one of the things that we love about these books is the found family element of it and how they are, the demigods are each other's family when their parents are not great. So they're definitely setting that up well.
I also liked that they gave Grover skills. So like we have Annabeth's like, I can put Grover again, pan flute and that's pretty much it.
The song he could play.
The Hillary Duff song.
The Hillary Duff song.
It's more of like, in the books, he develops more of as a character when he has this passion for Pan and he's able to like channel that. And also when he's the only one who can really understand and ground Percy. But at the same time, in this one, he's already able to do that from the beginning. And he actually is good at just talking to people in general, because Percy is not good at it. Annabeth is very not good at it. So I'm really glad they're like, he's going to be the person who can talk to anybody by using the power of, honestly, empathy. He's an empath. Percy's like, I can fight people. I can continuously sacrifice myself. Annabeth can, like, you know, have the brain cell. But at least Grover can use empathy. And it's almost in this one sus, because it's almost manipulative. It's very sneaky.
I was surprised because he's actively manipulating Ares to try to get him to tell things, which I was like, that's an advanced skill for Grover. Grover, Lightning Thief Grover is so innocent. And this take on Grover, he's still incredibly innocent, but he is a little bit more calculating here.
So back in the tunnel of love, Percy is not happy to be in this tunnel. He's the only one. Annabeth doesn't care. Annabeth is like immediately in the ride and she's going. She's like, whatever. Percy's like, oh my God, this is awful. Like, he has a moment of like, I cannot believe that Ares is like, has the audacity to cheat to get with Aphrodite, Hephaestus's wife, at Hephaestus's amusement park. Like, what is, like, why? Which is true. Again, that is super stupid. Like,
just so you know, I'm loyal. I would never do that. Just putting that out there for Annabeth. No reason at all, Annabeth. Like, just so you know.
They get into the ride and it becomes comical very quickly.
It's so funny.
What is love is playing. It was just hilarious because Percy's like, I think I know this song. I'm like, yes, you do, son. Like, please, everybody knows this song.
Them, like, not fully knowing the song is very Gen Z, though.
It's true.
It's so,
The Hephaestus animation on the walls was really cool. Also super funny. I noted it in the Discord when we were chatting, like watching. It's just like Hephaestus puts his trauma. He's like, look how Hera rejected me. Look how my wife rejected me. And like, this is my tunnel of love.
Like, no, it's actually my tunnel of Rejection as What Is Love is playing.
Like, what is love to Hephaestus? It's what torture.
What is love? That's what he wants to know.
His therapist asked him that question and told him to dive deeper, and then he took that project a little bit too far, and now everyone else has to suffer.
Imagine making a ride out of your trauma.
And then you make people you don't like or may have caused the trauma sit in it.
Yeah. Or even funnier, complete strangers that like person in the mess. Just like you send random people on this ride and they're like, who are you?
This is like some random uncle that they've never talked to. They're just like, I'm sorry this happened to you.
I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do about this?
I did get the vibe that Disney wants to make this an actual ride. They made it something that could, if they add Percy Jackson into Disney World, could easily make it a ride.
Yeah. That's what I said while watching, and I was like, oh, Disney is itching to make this a ride. Like, if they get the attention and money that they want, they are going to make a tunnel of love. And a thrill ride of love. Thrill ride of love.
Now, what's cool is, back to some of our press conferences that we got to attend, this is Eric Henry and Jeff White from the VFX talk. They were talking about making the Tunnel of Love. So I thought I would play it really quickly.
The first time I talked to, you know, Eric and Dan and John, they said, well, we've got a show where our main cast needs to travel across the United States. And we're shooting it all in Vancouver, and it has to be absolutely authentic. I think that really guided us towards the usage of this technology. We've been using the volume for like 6 or 7 years now, and it has a lot of advantage. Like, typically you would build a partial set and then you'd have a lot of blue screen around that. But blue screen still has a lot of disadvantages compared to the volume, in terms of the lighting is always feels a little bit strange, and you kind of lose some of the nice hair detail and edges. Whereas with the volume, we're actually shooting right into the final image. And what's so incredible about that is that it takes something that used to be done all in post-production, and it moves it up into the shoot. For the actors, you know, compared to just standing inside of a blue box, to be able to see the world around them makes such a huge difference, I think, performance-wise. And then especially for our camera operators, when you can frame not just the character, but the character and the background, I think the result is much, much stronger compositions in terms of what we were able to pull together. So on the volume, you have a living world that we can move through. So it's not like a static set. Great example is the Tunnel of Love. That was all shot with a 60-foot tank that was built inside of the volume. So you have all the beautiful reflections from that environment. And on the wall was the animation that they're watching, which was sort of a fun combination of techniques where we had the animation done as hand-drawn 2D animation and then played it back on the tunnels of the wall, of the virtual wall, in real time, so that our actors could see the story play out and react to that emotionally. So in the end, they were in a static boat and the whole world was moving around them. It's a really emotional scene between Percy and Annabeth, and you know, our actors just did a phenomenal job. Like, at the end of the day, we're sort of building all this technology around them, but they really pulled it off. And I think, again, for them, what was fantastic is that instead of sitting in a water tank with blue screen all around, they were actually could see the tunnel around them. They could see the animation playback live. And for our director, it was a really tricky scene because there was a lot of choreography between the music and the animation that was playing back that tells a story as they travel down the tunnel. So we had control set up where we could run a long take and then reset to a specific part of the action and have the actors watch that again and do a specific performance for it. But logistically, it was actually really great to essentially be working in a tank where the world moved around us, because that opened up ideas for shots that we may not have had otherwise. For instance, there was one where as soon as we were in there and we were seeing the world around us on the volume wall, the cinematographer Pierre Gill put the camera up and we did a shot of it reflecting off of the water underneath the kids. And it was so beautiful. And I don't think we ever would have even considered a shot like that if we were shooting on blue screen.
So I thought that was really cool that it doesn't they got to like react to the scenes rather than having to like just play off of a script on what they probably know that they're supposed to be seeing.
Yeah, and the amount of work that goes into just this particular set. I mean, this is a pretty big set with a lot of moving pieces. But you know, they had to make this whole animation and then broadcast it onto the wall, and then also have What Is Love playing. Like, I'm going to be singing that all day.
They also get tossed into the water, too. Yeah. And Percy is able to use his water powers to save them, which is pretty cool. Because Percy doesn't just kind of figure it out. He had it just like an episode ago.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just learned how to. I mean, he says he's like, I'm kind of figuring out. He doesn't really know how to use it. It seems like he only uses it in times of extreme emotion or danger.
Yeah.
Like with what we've seen with Nancy. I mean, with the toilets, with Clarice, the jumping off the arch, he's more so viewing that as like, my dad saved me, mixed with maybe he used his water powers, and then here to save him and Annabeth. And so it's all very reactive things, nothing that he's consciously doing.
So at the end, they see this shield, and it's part of this animatronic chair. And so I thought it was very fun that Percy remembers the myth of the chair rather than Annabeth. And it's because his mom has told him the story, and basically it's like he realizes his mom has been for years warning him about the Olympians and saying – and he uses Annabeth in that, like, staying away from you guys. She told me to stay away from you guys. Like Annabeth is included in that, which is a very interesting reaction.
I do love that they keep bringing up, they have Percy remembering things that his mom taught him as a way to keep bringing up Sally, even though she's only been physically present in the first episode. And there's a flashback as well, I think, in the fourth episode. But it's a great way to keep bringing her back and reminding us that.
So Percy comes to the conclusion that someone has to sacrifice this stupid ass.
I can only hear the Sorcerer's Stone. He's going to sacrifice himself.
No, Ron, no. You can't.
There must be another way.
Do you want? Okay, we're going to go on forever.
Stop Snape from getting that stone or not. In my sleep.
Oh, me too. It has become so ingrained. I'll pull it out randomly. And then everyone around me will respond. My favorite was I was at Friendsgiving. And it was playing on the background. and there's like a couple of my friends who are a bit older and they're not on social media. And so they obviously know Sorcerer's Stone, but they don't understand the recent impact these ones have had. So
the revival.
And so the way that like we all were waiting for that scene and in the middle of us all talking and like eating and hanging out, like half of us turn and like robotically do it in that really like almost over-exaggerated way. And everyone else was just like, dude, what the fuck was that?
It's like a cultural phenomenon. It's a ritual, actually.
But like, this is
all I could think of in this scene, especially like the way Percy's like, you have to go on without me. Like, it's giving Ron Weasley right now. Calm down.
No, I can't. It was a bit of a bummer that this happened again. I know I said that earlier. Where I was like, we just did this. Like, Percy's giving. Yeah. And it's just like, we already showed Annabeth. I know why they're trying to cement, like, they would never betray each other. Or if there is a betrayal of Annabeth later, it's just going to hurt so much more. But I just felt like that was already established. And I thought this was a bit unnecessary.
I do think it was a good way with Annabeth, not the sacrificing, but the part right after how she doesn't go to the shield. She goes to try to save Percy. That was a great way to show that Annabeth is now ready, like fully almost cares more about Percy than she does about the quest now.
Yes. But
yeah, I agree that I was kind of like, what is happening? He's sacrificing himself? Okay.
I had this moment where I was like, Annabeth only has four friends, right? Luke, Grover, Luke, Percy now, Talia's and Talia. Tree. And so now I was like, now two out of her only four friends have turned into some kind of object. Like, maybe Annabeth is the problem.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what she thinks.
I know. I was like, Percy keeps doing this to her, knowing her trauma. Like, it's really kind of mean.
Oh, but it is kind of cute how they have a moment when he is sacrificing himself and he tells her, like, no, you need, like, you're better at this. You know what you're doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I am more expendable than you are. And she looks like she wants to argue with that, but she also agrees with him. She's also like, I do know what I'm doing. True. Thank you.
So Hephaestus shows up. At first, Annabeth just like does the same thing that she does with Ares, where she's just like ignores him. She's like, I'm good, thanks, like turns her body. And then Hephaestus has to reveal that he is Hephaestus. He's like, this is my ride. Like, what are you doing? And I liked Annabeth's monologue. I love
it. It was so good.
She was like basically ridiculing the gods for the first time. She was really just expressing her disappointment in them. And she was like, but Percy isn't like the Olympians. Yeah. He isn't like everyone, which is we've discussed so in depth on this podcast, especially in Sea of Monsters, where Percy is the only one who's never let Annabeth down, except for the Rachel thing. But that was like a blip.
Yeah, that was a bit of a little blip. You know, hormones were involved. It's fine.
He just like didn't talk to her after she kissed him, but that's fine.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's communication issues. You know.
Yeah. It was more like he's an idiot rather than he actually. Yes. Hurt her, you know. Anyway, so the fact that this is like seen again, where Annabeth's like, this is the one person who, and when Luke betrays her, he definitely becomes the one person who has not disappointed or hurt her. And so she's expressing that because this is, you know, no longer just from Percy's point of view, we get Annabeth's point of view as well. And so loved that monologue.
I loved it. I thought, you know, the scene with Percy sacrificing himself, I also was like immediately like, I don't know that this was needed. I don't know how I feel, but I adored this monologue. And I love that she's just like talking about how everyone's all about power and glory, her mom and Ares and Zeus. And she's like, even I was, but Percy isn't. He isn't that way. And this is the first person I think that she's ever met who isn't like the gods, who isn't always trying to like prove themselves and get ahead, who is just good because they're good. And I'm like, oh, that is so sweet. And I love that. I love her monologue. It's great. Leah does a fantastic job.
She does.
10 out of 10.
It gets through to Hephaestus, who lets Percy go free. Mm-hmm. So great, great delivery. Always a good monologue is always the right way to go.
Yeah, and we know from the way Hephaestus is characterized in these books that he, you know, he's not like other gods. Like, his whole thing is that he doesn't really fit in with them. And so with her saying, like, he's not like them, I don't want to be like them, all of you suck, he's like, well, I kind of agree with you. They do all kind of suck. Like, my family is the worst. I just did a whole montage about it. I just
you saw the
movie.
Yeah, you had front row tickets.
Yeah.
Basically, the next scene is like a very cool, like badass shot of Annabeth and Percy walking back into the diner with the shield, where I definitely Ares thought they were going to fail. So,
oh yeah,
it's a nice vibe. It's very heroic. And then the next thing, which we felt like Ares was going to personally escort them to Los Angeles, instead gets them a ride with the zoo animals, which is very in line with the book. He's like, it's going to the Lotus Casino. The Lotus Casino, though, is where they walk into in the books. It's not the actual destination.
They just stumble on in there.
They're just like, we're tired, we need food. This seems like a place to go inside. Whereas this is the location because Hermes is apparently a gambler. And so like, they have to go find him. That.
Hermes just hangs out at the casino. Like, what? Doesn't he have a job? He's like the one Olympian with a job. He's to deliver things. That what is he just doing? Ocean.
Yeah.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. He's gonna be in the next episode, isn't he?
Yeah. And we're all trying to figure out if it's going to be a musical episode or not. I'm very excited.
I don't know how I would react to that. I think it would simply be an episode of us just like sitting in silence and like trying to start sentences being like,
oh, he's singing again. Okay, cool. Oh, he's rapping now.
I'd still watch it.
We see a little bit of Percy's sassiness where he's very annoyed with Aries, but not in the level of the book where he's like ready to fully body Aries in the end of the book, because he feels set up by the ride. And in the book, there's cameras and all that other stuff. And so this one, he's just like, you don't want to find a like threat, which is hilarious coming from this 3 foot tall child. Like, what are you going to do? Which is, I'm sure, like what it's supposed to be.
We know that later, though, because we know the Aries-Percy's fight happens, because it's all Walker can talk about in interviews. And so it's I wonder how that they're going to have that in the show, because Percy doesn't seem as pissed at Aries now. He's kind of just like done with Aries, like, I just get me to the next part of the quest. But we know that he's obviously going to learn something or find something out that is going to make him ready to throw hands with a god.
The episode ends with Grover very dramatically turning to them and says, when they're in the back of this zoo animal truck, is, I know who stole the master bolt. Do you think he's going to say Hades?
I don't know. Well, because they all think it was Hades, though. That's what they're going on this quest to go to Hades for, is because they're all already under that assumption. So I'm like, that can't be what Grover's about to say.
I wonder if he's going to say Aries. Because
we knew that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I wonder. Yeah. I have no idea. I was surprised with this line. I was sort of, I think Mike was talking while about something else while the dialogue was going on. And then I saw the caption of like, I know who stole the master bolt. And I was like, hold up. Like, I rewinded. I was like, Grover, who stole it? Tell me. What do you know? What do you mean?
It's a great way to end. I'm like, I think last episode's ending was supreme, but it was also, this one was a good way to end an episode. Like, we're excited for the next one. I think also because the last one was the last, we had like a long break before we got to see this one, you and I. So like extra, a lot of like excitement, but this was a good one. I'm so curious in what direction they're gonna go.
Yeah, same. And I think ending with Grover saying that as well, if I had not read the books, I would be so suspicious of Grover. Like, we didn't get to see his full conversation with Aries, and then he just comes to them like, I know who did it. I'd be like, he's lying, he did it. Like, I get why the TikTok people are convinced that he's the lightning thief.
Super sus.
They're trying to trick us. We can't be tricked because we've read these books 5 billion times. But we're still being tricked. They're still changing things, which is fun. It keeps us on our toes. It also upsets us lightly about certain changes, but that's okay.
So the two things that I thought that I feel like they should have kept, and I'm kind of sad that they didn't, is in the books, Annabeth freaks out. We see her lose her composure for the first time in the whole series because of the metal spiders that come at her.
Yes.
And I'm sad that they took that out, because it made her feel so much like a normal 12-year-old girl and like allowed her to be more multifaceted, like a person who is strong and stoic and, you know, how always has all the right answers and knows what to do next, is also really scared of spiders. I thought that was really brilliantly written, and I thought it was a kind of a bummer. Like, the way that in like a lot of adaptations they tried to make the girl a bit too girl bossy, that they take away fun character, like the funny characteristics of her. I'm a little nervous that they're gonna do that, but I understand, but I also don't.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I understand the film perspective, like just the logistics of an animatronic spider. It might feel kind of random to viewers, but I also really cling to that part of Annabeth having flaws is really important to me as a reader, which I think is important, like any character having flaws. But I think seeing, you know, strong female characters with flaws is super important. And seeing them, you know, very composed, badass characters still have silly fears or still have anxieties is really important. And I think we've seen time and time again in adaptations how that is often erased in lieu of the like hot badass. And I hope that they're not doing, I don't think they're doing that so far, but I have a lot of, I feel like I have trauma about it. Like, I'm like, please don't take this really complex girl and turn her into a badass, even though she is a badass, if that makes, I'm like, Annabeth is a badass.
Yeah, but you can
and
be a badass.
She's scared of spiders and really nerdy.
Like, nuance. Yeah.
Nuance. We're going back to it. And I think Leah's done a great job of showing a lot of like vulnerability, and there's a lot going on in her eyes, but in Annabeth's head, that makes me like, my gripe is more about the things they're like cutting out or the writing. I think that if they, we'll see, maybe spiders will show up in the next episode somehow, and it'll be like a little bit about Annabeth being afraid of them. I love women with flaws.
Me too. And I think as a flawed woman, I would like to see myself represented more.
Exactly. As a flawed woman.
Deeply flawed.
As actually incredibly flawed woman. Just like one single flaw in these characters is all we need. I mean, I love when they're deeply flawed. Yeah. I do love a deeply flawed woman.
Me too.
Yeah.
I talked this one through myself on why they made the changes here. So in the book, they have it almost like a show. Like Hephaestus had made this ride because he knew that he was going to trap Ares and Aphrodite together. And then it was going to live stream to Olympus, because I didn't realize that as a child, but they'd probably be, you know, doing the do and being very naked and vulnerable and then being broadcast to all of Olympus. And so instead, what Percy is really mad that he gets trapped in this situation. So he broadcasts himself, what I assumed I read as flipping it himself, like flipping off the cameras, but he doesn't. He just says a great line, tells the Olympians basically screw themselves, and like knocks out the camera. Has a very,
I think he's like shows over or something like that. Yeah.
And I would have loved to see that, because it's like the sassiness again. But I think with the storyline that they're going, where he saw immediate immediate consequences. I'm not going to say it. He's just with the way that he handled Medusa's head, and it wasn't to him, it was to Annabeth. He's much more cautious. He wouldn't do that because he knows it's not going to come back and bite him. It's going to come back and bite Annabeth, and he's not going to do that.
Oh, yeah. Aww.
So I felt like that made more sense, because that's the direction that they went. Whereas in the books, he continues to be like, what are you going to do? Kill me? And then he continues to try to be killed. So,
yeah. He's so unhinged. I love that. Yeah, I had one of my notes is I felt like the tone felt a lot more serious in this, in the show so far as a whole, and less silly goofy than the books, which is partly because in the books we're getting constant Percy's own inner dialogue, which is just like silly goofy, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
He's just like describing things in the most ridiculous way possible. Not to say I don't think the show is silly goofy, because I think that they've had really great moments of especially Walker being Percy.
Yeah, being a
and Grover singing. They've had great moments of that, but some of the kind of silly moments from the Tunnel of Love, especially in the book where Annabeth is like, you want to go in there with me? Like, what would that mean? And Percy's like, I actually don't. Like, and they're like, we can't hold hands or anything. It's just a lot more silliness. But, you know, we only get 30-something minute episodes. So it is what it is.
That is
And true. My other... like overall thought was I think I talked about this, but I love how they're showing Annabeth's continual loss of trust and faith in the gods and how that's developed. Like, she just straight up with Ares and with Hephaestus, she really is not respecting them at all. Whereas in the first three episodes, she was very much like, we respect the gods and we get rewarded. That is the rule. And then in the fourth episode, she saw, I respect my mother. I do all this stuff for my mother, and my mother punishes me for something Percy does. So therefore, I don't have to respect them anymore. And we see that continued development for her, which I do think is fascinating when paired with Percy's newfound, like, hey, I like my dad in this episode. It's great.
It's going to be fun to see those two things progress at the same level, parallel to each other.
Yeah. I have a feeling they'll end up back somewhere in the middle. Like, they're somewhere in the middle of like, oh, the gods occasionally help us, but they're not great. And we shouldn't grovel before them.
And they're going to continuously see, like we saw in the books, Percy's constantly presented with moments where he's like, oh my God, the gods suck. And yeah. I'm doing all of this work for them. And I'm seeing them being absolute hypocrites and useless and just the worst people. And it shakes his fate and moves him a little bit towards Luke's cause. But never, he'll never go that far.
Mm-hmm. So let's do the lightning bolt round questions now. Do you want to hear our rewind question?
Yes. What is it?
Okay. So if you had to choose a theme park ride to trap your enemy in, what ride would it be?
I forgot that we did, until I was looking at our old notes, that each episode, one of us chose three questions. I couldn't even think of one properly today. That's crazy that we would choose to do three. Anyway, I clearly chose this question. I think, you know, the, I don't know what I said in past me, but I think, like, you know, the ride that spins really fast and you're basically like strapped into the wall and gravity especially holds you there when you're standing up.
Oh God, I hate those.
I would trap my enemy there.
Throws up.
Yes. I would trap my enemy there and just keep them spinning forever. And like, that's also fun because if they, I think I saw a, either a TV show or a movie recently where two characters are trying to get out of something that's spinning like that. And they're just sliding all over the place and hitting each other. I don't remember where it's from, but it's like something recently. And I'm just imagining my enemies just like bouncing like ping pong balls, just... I think it'd be a great one.
That's great. Yeah, I think on that theme of terrible fair rides, I'm thinking of the type of ride that, like, you know, the drop rides, they just like send you really high and then drop you, to trap them on that, but it never drops. You just keep going high and like you have the anticipation and like it just wait at the top.
And like a baby drop and then it keeps going higher and higher.
Yeah. They think it's going to be the big one and it never is. It never is.
How did we talk for three minutes?
We talked for a while. We must have like told some story about a ride. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure told the story of how I died on the roller coaster. Let's see.
Sammy, you're welcome to cut out or speed up whatever you want. But you know, this might be, these might be gold.
All right, if you had to choose a theme park ride to trap your enemy in, what would it be?
Oh.
So I can answer while you think.
Yeah.
I thought of kind of like the Peter Pan ride at Disneyland. Ooh. I've only been to Disneyland like twice in my life and haven't been in a long, long, long time. But I remember thinking the Peter Pan ride was cool, but also very creepy. Oh, no, it wasn't Peter Pan. It was the Winnie the Pooh one.
That one is creepy.
Because you go to Tigger's weird psychosis dream. Yes. And you're just like terrified there.
I find that scary still as an adult.
I would totally trap my enemy there because at that point it's not about like, you know, shaming them publicly. It's about, you know, trapping them in a fever dream.
Yes. Ooh, that would be the Tigger section. The bride gets stopped in that. Ooh, that would be, that's genius.
Yeah.
I think I would say I have two ideas because I'm on the Disneyland train right now. So Haunted Mansion, one time I got stuck in Haunted Mansion in front of the talking, like, head in the ball.
Oh, that's the worst.
And I was, like, me and my sister were in the ride together, and we, like, it was to the point where we, like, memorized the whole speech that she has. So that was terrible. But my other answer would be, did you ever go on the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride in Disney?
Again, I haven't been to Disney. I've been to Disney, like, twice in my recent life, and... it was a long time ago.
Yeah. The Mr. Toad's Wild Ride is, it's definitely like for younger kids. When I went to Disneyland the first time, I was 5 and we went on like all the 5-year-old rides. And that ride, you sit behind like a driver's side and the plot of it, it's really disturbing. The plot of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride is you like end up in hell at one point because you like violate traffic laws and then you end up in fiery hell. And I was behind the driver's wheel and I was 5, so I thought I was actually driving it. And I have an authority. I hate breaking rules, especially as a kid. And I was with my mom and grandma, and I was fully, like, screaming in the ride when we went to hell. I was like, no, I didn't mean to. I was like Trump. And then I went on it again like years, like when I was an adult, probably last time I went there. And it's like very stupid. But I would love to get someone trapped in the hell part of that ride.
Like specifically Mr. Toad's version of hell.
Mr. Toad's wild ride hell.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is so funny because so this was 2020. 2022, I think, I went to Disneyland for the first time since I was like a preteen. And I remember texting you being like, I'm going to go on the Mr. Toad ride because you've talked it's about scary. It. On the and now that you've mentioned it, I remember texting you and being like, that is the craziest storyline. You basically it's like you drive drunk and you go to hell. That's the whole plot of that story. Yeah.
No, if you go, a lot of the really old Disney rides like have quite a like prohibitionist undertones and some Christian undertones to them.
Yes.
And also that's fun because now, fun fact, my mom has told me that she's now listening to our new episodes. Hi, Mom, because she's watching the show. So she'll remember that because every time I cried for like hours after I went on that ride and they felt so bad. And now every time I've gone to Disney, if I go on that ride, I like always take a selfie with Mr. Toad and send it to her, like being my man that you traumatized me with.
Well, it's super funny too, because after you said that being trapped in Haunted Mansion, the one time that I went, I got trapped.
Did you get stuck?
The ride stopped. Yeah. And we were
I think it's a rite of passage. Yeah.
And we were, it was Halloween themed because I went in Halloween time. Yeah. And so I was stuck in front of like one of the Nightmare Before Christmas characters just going on and on and on and on. And I was like, I'm going to lose it in about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That ride is just, it's a great ride, but it really needs some work.
Yeah.
I've gotten stuck on it like almost every time I've gone on, I swear. Okay, this is just like the ride episode. Mm-hmm. All right, but this lightning bolt question I came up with. What god would you most like to eat burgers or veggie burgers for us with?
Honestly, Hestia. I want to sit down and have her solve all of my problems and make me feel cozy.
Oh, you'd feel so warm. Mm-hmm. She'd probably like order you tea.
Yeah, you know, and she'd just be like, tell me about your life. Like, let me wrap everything up in a nice little bow and give you a little hug.
Yeah, I would say Demeter simply because I think she'd have good spots for veggie burgers.
Oh, that's true.
You know, she'd have the hookup and I guess I could listen to her talk about vegetables. That's fine.
Farming.
It would not be the impossible burger. I don't want any of that. It would be like a good veggie burger.
Bean patty.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There was an email I got. Oh, it was from Anne, who mentioned that Seaweed Brain had talked about if Sally died, do you think Percy would have joined Luke?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I thought, I was like thinking about it very deeply. And I know that that's what they said on Seaweed Brain. They do think that he would have, like, that was a, if something had happened to Sally and it was the god's fault, Percy would then easily join Luke. I don't think so, because Percy's fatal flaw is he's loyal to the people he loves and he could never betray camp in the way that Luke does. Like when Percy is angry, like so that the whole point is like Luke is too angry to see that he's hurt the people he loves. His anger is more important than helping the people he loves, and he realizes that a little bit too late at the end. Percy's anger would never be enough because the people he loves comes first. So Annabeth, Grover, and the rest of camp would ground him. He would be horrible and he would be like a mini villain. So that's, I just like remembered that. And I thought that that was an interesting like character debate.
Yeah. And I think my answer is it depends on when. I think if his mom was hurt, like with the Minotaur thing, if it was Zeus instead of the Minotaur who killed his mom, I think that at that point Percy would go evil. But I think, you know, if he had already developed a friendship with Annabeth and regained his trust with Grover after Grover ratted on him to the principal, then he would be loyal to them. I agree that he's like, That's a good one. And also saying the Seaweed Brain podcast's name just made me remember that Annabeth says Seaweed Brain for the first time in this episode, which was exciting.
Oh, I didn't catch Percy. That.
When he comes out of the water, he's like, she calls him like Seaweed Brain when he volunteers to sacrifice himself.
Oh, man. Well, this one was a long one. Thank you for bearing with it. These are all going to be long. This was like, I know. Get it out of the way. We have a lot to say.
Dive
into. But next time, we will let you know about our release schedule. We're hoping that we'll be able to release episodes a bit earlier than this one. This one was we watched it live with you, which is also fun. But episode 6 is next, and we'll let you know about release dates when we know more information.
Yes, indeed. Don't forget, you can join our Patreon if you want. For only $3 a month, you can see our old outlines and also be able to message us. I think that's a feature on Patreon. Whatever you decide to do, it's a great way to support the podcast.
And like we mentioned earlier, thank you for all your kind messages. If you want to send us more, the link to the audio message is in the episode description. So just say hi to us there.
And you can follow us on social media at Camp Half Pod, and you can email us camphalfpod@gmail.com.
If you have not, if you're new to the podcast, we're sorry for spoiling anything, but please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Bye.